it's SARS, unquote, mute, calling from his place of work, welcoming everyone to the new episode of Radio Freak America, and just to notify everyone, the ASRAM is complete. I repeat, the ASRAM is complete, and the time you hear this, I'll be sitting, waiting for Matrix Reloaded to start. Later.
End of message. To erase this message, press 7. To save it, press 9.
Security alert, all decks.
After very careful consideration, sir, I've come to the conclusion that your system sucks.
Hey, I don't believe that any system is totally secure.
Remember, hacking is more than just a crime.
The number you have reached, 911, has been changed to a non-published number.
The number you have reached, 911, has been changed to a non-published number.
That I need to know, and I need to know now.
You are listening to Radio Freak America.
Thank you for calling Quest Communications. If you are calling from a touch-tone phone, press 1 now. If you are calling from a rotary phone, please remain on the line for the next available customer service representative.
Mute, how's that SARS coming along, man?
What are you talking about, man? I'm fine.
Oh, dude. I'm going to get it through the phone. So the ass ramming is complete, but the SARS has just set in. Mute is now with us again.
I'm cleansed.
At least for now.
It's been I had a colonoscopy, you know. They flushed it all out.
Nice.
All good. Everything's over with, but it will start back up again in a few weeks, but not as bad.
Good, good. Well, I hope you enjoyed that. Stank is with us.
Yep, yep.
This is going to be a nice episode because we have the premiere of a new segment, and I'm going to hang on to it until it's time. I am Duel. This is RFA 63. I'm going to open the show right now and give everybody your listening regimen. That's right. Things I think you should take the time. You know what? Turn off the damn TV, okay? Don't be watching.
Nice.
Well, except for American Idol, right? Right, Stank? Don't watch TV. Don't listen to clear channel radio. I want you to listen to alternative media, and I'm going to give you the regimen, your weekly regimen right now. Monday nights, let's start off your week right. Not with Monday Night Stupid, right, Monday Night Football, but with the Sean Kennedy Show. That's right, you're going to get good information. You're going to get the big picture of life sometimes. You know, Sean's a little down right now, but I think, I think the messages are still there, and you need to listen to that. If you want a little more entertainment on those Monday nights, stick around for Tales from the After Now. That's a great show. Again, turn off your lights, throw on your headphones, and listen to that show. It's awesome. Then, Wednesday nights, this show, Radio Freak America. Listen to us on Rant Radio. Download it, whatever you want. Check out Radio Freak America. We're going to... All right, you know what? You hear me joking about what I talk about specifically. All right, what is Radio Freak America, right? Technology, privacy, and freedom. technology. We've got the goods on the technology. We have privacy. We throw that in. And freedom. We make sure that you have, you have the resources at your fingertips, like this alternative media, to make sure that you can listen to other viewpoints. And again, I may joke about some of the things I talk about specifically, being freaking. We specialize in freaking. We've got a new segment as well. But I joke about what I talk about. But guess what? Freaking is a serious subject. The telecommunication system is expansive. It is the most elaborate network on this planet. And to be able to manipulate it, to be able to solve problems with it, gives you power, yes. Power that you must use responsibly, but power nonetheless. Now, don't mention specifics. All right, and I talk about SE and stuff like that. Now, guys, stank mute, don't mention specifics, but on the con the other night, did you see some power that could be had from social engineering?
Oh, a lot.
Yes, a lot. And we here, and I guess we could call ourselves white hats, I guess. We're here to give you the information about the telecommunications network, about computers, about technology that is used to compromise your privacy, and I want you to take that information and the power you gain from it and use it wisely. All right? So Wednesday nights, Radio Freak America. Thursday nights, Spastic Audio Breakdown. If you've got any aggression from that week, any aggression, you listen to that show and it'll get it out. McJay's kind of angry, he's kind of brutal, and I like it. He talks about a lot of stuff that isn't pleasant, but it's stuff you should listen to. Then at your leisure, listen to Gamer whenever a new app comes on, right? That's your fun. Check out the video games. I know I game. I enjoy it immensely. In the Now, every month, soon to be bi-weekly, In the Now is going to give you the down low on computers, computer security, and the industry. Now, I just started listening to a show. In fact, I listened to my first one today, Diagonal Perspective, with Rumbling Sky. This was my first one. It was pretty good. So I got to check that out more and see if I want to, throw that in there. So that is your weekly listening regimen, okay? Turn off the damn TV and get educated. And have fun. It is a lot of fun. It's way more fun than TV. TV is mind-numbing. It drives me crazy. It drives me up the wall. Okay? You'll notice that Off the Hook and Off the Wall aren't on there. Off the Wall, and those may be very good shows. I don't... what do I say about that?
Incorrect with Emmanuel Goldstein?
Yeah, to quote not theory, politically incorrect with Emmanuel Goldstein. They're just... I don't know. I've heard a lot of bad things in the community about them. I'm not enjoying them as much anymore. I'm looking for the more alternative views. It's almost too mainstream for me, personally. So that's why I didn't mention those. You may think differently. Let me know. Let them know if it's a good show. You like it. But it is not in that weekly listening regimen. So.
Hey, Duel?
Yes.
Can I watch TV if it's the porn channel?
Oh, yeah, of course. That's essential.
All right, I'm sorry. Now we're cool.
Everybody must get your weekly dose of porn.
For a minute there.
Hey, man, there's nothing wrong with porn, man. That's why I loved Italy, because you got the soft porn going on, at the late night. It was great.
Wow,
wow. Okay.
Wow.
We're going to go straight into... what's that,
you? That's PG-13 here.
Sorry. Okay, we're going to go straight into from porn to the... Freak News, that's right, Freak News early, because we got that news segment, it's going to be awesome. Freak News, first I got an email from Kiroshi, which I didn't print out. Oh, crap. That sucks, I can't do anything on my box. Oh, I totally forgot about that. Oh, well. I'll read it next week. The email from Kiroshi will be on next week. He sent in some pics, though. In fact, a lot of people have been responding when I asked for pics of their boxes. Whether it be their freak boxes or their TNIs or cans, whatever, and I've been getting a lot of stuff. So I tell you what, stay tuned next week, actually this weekend, stay tuned to the Freak Photo Gallery on oldschoolfreak.com. I'm going to have a big update, lots of pics, maybe change the sections around a little bit, so definitely stay tuned for that. I did print out, though, I did remember this. Now, what are two of my favorite things? Payphones and Wi-Fi. Well, guess what? You heard about Canada. The Wi-Fi hotspots going on up there. Well, Verizon, now this is off Slashdot, but this is good enough to read. Verizon envisions the 21st century payphone internet hotspots. That's right, combining two of my favorite things, chocolate and peanut butter, payphones and Wi-Fi. It's a good article. I love this line. Payphones, those lonely relics from the pre-cellular era, are about to be reborn. Well, anything that will save the payphone is good in my book, because they're just too much fun. You can't do away with payphones. I think they will be universally useful regardless of the regardless of the widespread use of cellular phones. Oh, I love this line too. This is a nice quote. As Americans, we're all trained to look for payphones. I think that's very true. We look for the signs. We look for the booths. So basically what this is that Verizon is going to start making payphones using their DSL service into hotspots. I'm sure they're going to have some type of Windows software that'll make you pay for it. But they're going to be making payphones, again, into Wi-Fi hotspots. I think this is a great idea. Anything to keep payphones around. And, personally, cellular phones, I'm not all that interested in cellular phones, personally. I would rather have payphones everywhere than cell phones, you know. People around, in the shithole I live, people walk around with their cell phones like they're a novelty. They're like glued to their ear, you know. People that help you in stores, they're talking on their cell phones for kind of loud. Put it down. It's just a freaking radio. It's a two-way damn radio. Pisses me off. Don't take away my payphones. Next on the Freak News, Quest is entering the long-distance market. I'm sure you've all heard about this. We've actually talked about it in the past. But Quest here is pimping it big time in the metro area I live. Big time. I mean, they've got these huge banners on the sides of their buildings. They've got a building downtown. They've got huge banners, Quest Long Distance. They've got banners on one of the main switch, actually the switch I'm on. They've got a huge banner. Buses, television commercials, everywhere, all over the place. Quest Long Distance. I've got a website for you, and I'll read it off. It's a little lengthy. HTTP, of course, www.quest.com/about/policy/LD capital R reentry. So it's LD capital R EENTRY. Their reentry into the long distance market. Of course, they have to open up their market to CLEX. Their copper, that is. Well, who knows how much that is. This is actually a really big topic. There's also another site, nmcompetition.org. I'm in Albuquerque, of course. This is a big topic, and that is competition. ILEX being able to give long distance while opening up the local loop to other people, which is almost true, not quite true, of course. This is a big topic, and I think I might save this for another show and maybe do a little special on it, or maybe even an article. This is huge. But definitely go to that site, quest.com/about/policy/LD reentry with a capital R, and read up on Quest Long Distance. There's a number, too. Oh, and it's 866-QUEST-LD. Again, that's 866-QUEST-LD for Long Distance. Read up on that. I know I will be. Next, this is awesome. Where'd it go? Oh, it's huge. Oh, there it is. Hold on. Okay, I bought... Oh, my God, it's heavy. I traded, actually, at the Electronic Surplus, my favorite place. Much of my old PC stuff I didn't need, for a gorgeous, honking box of a phone. I'm flipping it over here. I'm reading it. Of course, it's Western Electric. It's old. It's a rotary dial Princess handset, and it's a giant box with a bunch of lit buttons on the front. And let's see, Bell System property. That's awesome. Not for sale. Where is it? 73B control. Here we go. It is a conference set control unit, 709B. And I think 73B. I don't know what the exact model is, but it's huge. And it's a. I plugged it in. I had the old school power cord that it takes. And I plugged it in, and it works right now as a speakerphone. It's got, in fact, I'll read the buttons off to you. Off, set mic on, gold mic, green mic, auxiliary dial, and mics off. I should have plugged it in for the show. It's awesome. It's like a speakerphone. It might be a conference unit. It's got a bunch of quarter-inch audio jacks in the back. It's great. In fact, I've got pictures of that. That'll go up on the Freak Photo Gallery as well. So wait for that. And if anybody has any... Oh, God, I got to put this down. Oh, if anybody has any information about this box, from briefly what I've told you, or from the pictures that I put up, let me know. That is, that's not the Freak News. Stank has got a piece for the Freak News.
Now, actually, there is a really good article in Popular Science this month. I'm not sure if it's on newsstands yet, but should be any day now. It has an article, like 4 or 5 pages, actually, pretty good article on Java and Java support on cell phones. And it's very interesting. It's basically explains how on the cell phones, which Duel hates, but on the cell phones, they have...
They suck. They suck.
They have Java support. They have Java support on the cell phone, so you can write apps to run on your cell phone. Since it's in an actual Java sandbox that you can work within that sandbox, that's kind of an industry term that basically means that they've set aside a secured, so they think, area for you to run Java apps in. And that's basically how all these games that have become popular and camera is usually Java apps that run that, or even web surfing. Is usually how they do that, is by putting them in a Java area and let them run. The thing is, they don't have any access. They keep it in a separate area. That's the term sandbox. They keep it locked in a sandbox where it can't spill out and get into the other programs on the phone. You can't dial out using Java. You can't, as it is now, can't dial out using a Java applet. You can't write something that will dial out. You can't... get access to other Java programs through the phone. You can't access the digital signal processor that encodes your the digits that represent your voice. It's all restricted to that sandbox and keeps it separate. And their rationale, which is probably very valid, is they, you know, foresaw that somebody might write a program, a virus for lack of a better word, that, for example, may cause your phone to automatically dial 911 over and over again. Obviously, you have to go out of your way to get this on your phone, you know, but if you go to a website and download a Java app that could be a Trojan, that could be claimed to be a game or something else, that could possibly happen if Java was not locked and run separately. So I thought that was pretty interesting, but...
Very much so.
Yeah.
Very much so. Now, and let me clarify something. Maybe it's more apropos to say that I don't appreciate how some people use cell phones, right? It is a tool. I have a cell phone, and I use it, and I appreciate its worth. If I need something, and it's a remote area, I've got analog service as well as digital service. I can, you know, get a tow truck or something. If I need to talk to somebody quickly, I can use my cell phone. But I don't sit on the damn thing all day long. So many people I see, it's up to, you know, they got it against their ear and they're not saying anything. They just, like, hold it up there like it's, I don't know, like it's a fashion statement or something. It's a radio. It's not even a phone. It's a two-way radio. Okay? Put it down. Make your call, then put it down. Okay? Put it in your pocket. All right, sorry. It just annoys me, you know?
We had an idea, actually. A friend of mine had a Chicago 2600 meeting. Because I think that was around the time that article came out on Slashdot about writing your own apps for it. Someone wrote like a card app for it or something, like poker.
Uh-huh.
And so he was thinking like, hey man, it would be cool if you could write like a web server for it and serve a website off your phone. And I actually thought about this. So what I did was, my friend, there's something you could actually download your own backgrounds for the phone. It's actually Stank's phone, exactly the same that my friend has.
Motorola T720.
Yeah, he has that. He also has the camera too. He's never used it. So. I set him up a little graphic for the background of his phone, and I got the IP address off the phone because I got in the logs. I tried pinging it. What would happen was it would just time out. Then I did a trace route. Now, this might be completely wrong, or someone might have a better idea of what's going on. But what happened was, he would send the ping out, the pack would bounce back in between two routers, or switches or something, two routers, before the timed alive expired, the pack would expire and then come back. It was the weirdest thing in the world.
Hmm.
Get to one router, hop to another one, and then bounce between the second and the third one for, like, ever.
That's crazy. All I know is we're definitely going to need IPv6 if every phone's going to have an IP address.
Yeah.
Definitely need that. Oh, before we leave the freak news, I'll say this as well. I had some more Quest stuff. Been talking to Quest lately, and I got a lot of info. But let's leave it on the cell phone topic and end the freak news. And maybe I'll do a little more of a Quest special another day. Here we go. Man, I feel kind of like bitter tonight or something. I just feel like, I don't know, angry. You know what happened? I'm driving home, and some asshole in front of me, drinking a beer, right, in my hood, in my, you know, in my neighborhood, right, drinking a beer in his truck, and he tosses the empty bottle out the window in one of my, you know, extended neighbor's yards. And that pissed me off to no end. So I sped up and got his license plate number, just, you know, and of course he took off. Just, oh man, shit like that just pisses me off. Put down your damn cell phone, quit drinking and driving, you fucking morons. Alright. Hey, that was the happy freak news. Sorry. So, let us, on that happy note, let me get a drink. Here, let me get a drink of my Bloody Mary here real quick here. No, it's water. We've got a new segment. I promised you a new segment. This is going to be a great segment. On every show, and this came about from the balance, right? We want to make sure we have balance. Well, the balance is going to be hack and freak, right? We're going to have freak news, and we're also going to have the hacker news. That's right, and Stank's going to bring it. Stank is going to bring his computer savvy, his knowledge, and he's going to impart it upon you. So, for the first, I don't have any sounds. We got to have some, okay, what the hell, this is the the first ever hacker news. Stank, what's up, man?
I can go back to the bounce, chicka bounce.
Yeah, the porno news.
You know, actually, let's continue the cell phone kind of crosses over, especially with the Java that we were talking about. I think that's actually a pretty good segue, good to cross over into the hacker news, because what I just mentioned earlier about that Java and the way it's running right now, they're actually in the process of changing that. They have a revised version of MIDP, which is Mobile Information Device Profile, that's going to start allowing Java applets to access some of those previously inaccessible areas. So there could possibly be some of the things we mentioned before. Hopefully they are still keeping security in mind, and they won't be able to, you know, program, well, what, frankly, in my opinion, it would be a virus. If you download something that's going to start dialing 911 over and over, that's not cool or funny at all to me.
No, it isn't.
So, you know, hopefully they're thinking ahead about some of that stuff, but they are actually opening it up a lot more in the future to be able to write. And their goal and what they're trying to do is push the cell phone technology and let people develop stuff and have more things on your cell phone. So it's well intended, but hopefully they'll actually deliver. And to, you know, again, it's progress, and it's allowing us to do great new things, hopefully, and hopefully less of the bad things on our cell phone. In particular, I know one very specific, a great idea, Duel. We've had a project that we've been kicking around lately that I think would be perfect for this.
I believe so.
And what do you think? The area code lookup.
Ah, yes. That should have been in the freak news. Damn.
Yeah, see, that's exactly, you know, that's a good segue. We can put that program, write it for Java, and port it down to cell phones to support that Java applet.
That'd be very nice. Be very useful. And not to mention, if you could do it, you know, a quick, what would that be, a few bytes? I mean, even, that'd be so little bandwidth, right? They charge you by bandwidth, if I'm correct. So it'd be much smaller, probably cheaper than calling, you know, what, #121 on AT&T or some type of operator assistance to find an NPA.
Got a call coming out. I'll flash over. 1 second.
All right.
Yeah, so you download that, but even what you're talking about bandwidth, it would be tiny, and it's a one-time download. Once it's there, you know, it stays there, so you get that long-distance call, or you get a call from a area code that you don't recognize. You want to see where it is, like, before you answer, or see who called you afterwards before you call them back, see where it came from, try to recognize it, things like that. I think that's absolutely a very useful applet that you could have on a cell phone. There's probably hundreds and hundreds of others, and I'm sure if anybody has some great ideas, we'd love to hear about it. You want to post to the forums or email us some good stuff that you think would be useful on a cell phone. This article, actually, in Popular Science, goes into some more detail, which I'm not going to read too much, but like one of the best ones that I thought was very, very, very lofty goals. They were talking about how you can use cables to connect your cell phone to your serial port on your computer and things like that to get data and programs into it.
Right.
Well, they actually have a project. I'm not sure if it's open source project or not, but they're having a project that will allow you to have a special cable connected to your cell phone that you can actually hook into the computer on your car. And when you go to Ford, fix or repair daily, piece of shit car, Ford, and they want to charge you that $80 diagnostic fee to tell you what's wrong with your piece of shit car, other than it is a Ford, they charge you that fee, and then they'll tell you what they think it is, and they'll start listing all these broken things. Well, somebody is working on an application on your cell phone that you can plug in, and you can get return codes, and you can get details of what that computer is showing, and then you can go to Ford or your own mechanic or do it yourself and repair these things on your own with a fucking cell phone. That's amazing to me.
Yes, that would be semi-useful. That would be very useful.
And again, that's because of the serial port, the serial connection. You can connect with the right cable to a lot of different devices, cars, any kind of communications, other communications device. I think it would probably plug into or electronics device. So the possibilities there are endless. I would love to see what kind of ideas people come up with for something like this.
Time will only tell.
Yep. One of the biggest news items of this past week, I guess, would have to be from our good friends at Microsoft. I think everybody heard that there was more problems with Passport. Been problems with Passport in the past. They were actually in trouble with the FTC and had settled with them to improve Passport security. Well, guess what? They didn't. Anybody copy, surprised?
Yeah, copy-paste hack.
Yeah. They claim that, and if anybody's not familiar, there was basically a form, a way that you could go in there and get or change other people's passwords and access to their Passport account. This is a single sign-on, which is also something I'd like to go into detail on in a later show one time, of the pros and cons of a single sign-on environment, which is where the industry is pushing right now. You have Passport that signs you not only into your Hotmail or whatever mail account you have with Microsoft, God help you, but your credit card account, your shopping, your anything else that you've got linked to that account, one access, one password, and somebody gets that, and they have access to a lot of your stuff. I mean, this is not real news, but this is really still happening for those of you out there who don't think it does. This is still going on. Now, Microsoft claims that there were no reports from 200 million accounts. 200 million Passport accounts Microsoft has.
No reports.
Yeah, exactly. There were no reports. Yeah, right. None that they know of.
Right.
People don't even know that somebody's been in there, probably. But the number, 200 million, just blew me away. I couldn't believe that.
Yeah, 200 million with one key to the castle.
Yep, exactly.
That is the dumbest shit I've ever heard. I don't believe this.
Scary thought, isn't it?
It's like having, I don't know, like being a sysadmin and having a five-letter name for the password on a lot of stuff. That would be stupid. Dude, you have to blow your nose.
No.
I can hear you freaking snorting your...
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Ooh, we've got an award in the Hacker News.
Yes, we... I think it's probably time.
I think so, too.
I don't remember when we gave out the last one, but the ever-popular.
One of my favorites.
Fucknut of the Month.
Okay? Oh, yeah. I give it to that motherfucker who's throwing beer bottles in my neighborhood, you piece of shit.
Well, he gets the honorary
Fucknut
of the Month award, huh?
Thank you. You probably can't use a computer, dickhead.
Give the Fucknut of the Month award to a writer from Network Magazine, one of my regular reading materials that usually pisses me off more than any other.
Uh-huh.
This gentleman wrote an article last issue, a month ago, about honeypots and about what a honeypot is. It was a pretty generic article, nothing spectacular about it. And yes, in that article, he used the term hacker inappropriately. Well, that act in and of itself, you know, I have to take with a grain of salt because it happens so often. I can't cry at every single time somebody inappropriately used the words hacker. I try to appropriately use the word hacker when I can, and hopefully that will outweigh the inappropriate ones. Crying over each individual one is kind of lost.
Yeah.
It's still worth doing, don't get me wrong, but I just prefer a different method of trying to reclaim the word hacker. Well, somebody, actually I guess I should probably give credit here, this gentleman by the name of Chris L. White wrote in and did exactly what I just said. He wrote in and said he did not appreciate their using the term hacker the way they did, basically in a negative connotation. And kudos to him for writing it in, and they actually printed this in there.
Nice.
Well, here's where the Fuck Nut of the Month Award comes in. Andrew Conry Murray replied in defense of himself.
What?
He replied to this letter to defend his use of the word hacker, and he said, quote, "Some people have tried to salvage the distinction by using qualifiers such as white hat, gray hat, and black hat, but I find these terms cumbersome. I agree that I could have used the word cracker in the sentence, but I didn't because it might momentarily distract readers. Does he mean a black hat hacker or a derogatory term for white people or a baked salty snack food?"
What the fuck?
What?
So, for being the laziest human being on the face of the fucking planet, sorry if that was real loud, our good friend hit the Fuck Nut of the Month Award. And Conry Murray, congratulations. Have to give out mad props for earning this month's distinction.
For being a lazy POS. Now, his name is Andrew Conry Murray?
I get Andrew Conry, Conry-Murray.
Sounds like a country western singer.
I don't know. Maybe it's Bubba Joe Jim Bob. I don't know if it's one of those things or not.
Unbelievable. How many letters in the word criminal and how many letters in the word hacker, you know? I don't understand.
Just the simple fact that he comes right in and says, "I didn't use it because it was cumbersome." Oh, you poor pathetic fuck. You bastard. You just got lazy, and it's journalists like you who ruin not only the name of hackers, but it's journalists with no integrity like you that go out and publish this stuff and treat this is Network Magazine, a trade publication, and people are going to read this and they're going to get the wrong idea, not only about hackers, but about many things in general. So you're a dirty bastard, and I hope you never write for this magazine or any other magazine ever again.
Yeah. You know, to be probably perfectly honest, he probably knew exactly what he was doing. You know, but he left the word hacker in there because it's much more, how do I say, you know, sensationalistic. You know, it's much more, you know, maybe it'll instill more fear in people. Who knows? You know, I think it's purposeful. And I think his response is probably just a bunch of crap. He just, well, yeah, the truth is, I stick hacker in there so I get published, you know. I stick hacker in there so it'll look better, you know, and I'll get more reads. And seriously, I really think that is what everything from trade magazines to TV to advertising, it's all just to get you to look at it. It's all just to excite you. You know, recently there was a videotape of a bunch of girls beating on each other, you know. Big freaking deal. This has been happening since man learned how to hit another man, okay? It doesn't matter, man or woman, but they got it on tape. So they make up a bunch of crap so they can show you this sensationalistic video. That's all they do. So they make up a story around it. Well, like women are beating on each other very recently. It's a new phenomenon. No, it's not. All right? Women have been beating on each other for a long freaking time, and they will for a long time to come. But they just found a nice video that looked good, right? It's the visual. What's the visual? That's the visual. That's all it is. This guy, I'll leave hacker. Ooh, hacker would actually fit here. That'll look good. It'll be sensationalistic. That's great. All right. Throw it in there.
And if people get that visual of what a hacker is,
that's
and
right.
Once you've got a visual, it's hard to get it out of your mind.
So what this guy had was, you know, it was too cumbersome for him to use his morals. It was too cumbersome for him, you know, to be forthright in what the word really means. I'm sure he probably knows, but it doesn't matter to him. All that matters is money. Money to him, money to the magazine, that's all that matters.
And the shame, there's just a damn shame that in general, not just in journalism, unfortunately, yes, in journalism, but across the world, integrity is just a word that's disappearing from people's vocabulary.
What was that? What was that word?
And that it's in journalism because they're the ones that reach most other people, but integrity in general, as we know it, is dying.
Integrity? I've never heard that word before. It's brand new.
Ironically, it's hackers and freaks that have more integrity than the majority of people that I have met in the business world.
Yeah, no shit. No shit.
Integrity in that statement is just amazing.
There's so many, you know, wrong stereotypes about hackers, about how, you know, how they're antisocial. Quite the contrary. Hackers are probably some of the most social creatures in this antisocial society. You know, we put down our cell phones and speak to each other face to face. We have meetings monthly. And they're great, and we laugh, and we have fun, and we share ideas. You know, we argue. We have a great time.
And I, you know what, and you're mentioning that, but I can't help but be reminded of the Hacker's Manifesto by the Mentor. We exist without nationality, without skin color, without discrimination. We exist without the faults that exist in other people in society.
That's right. Integrity is inherent in the community. It is. And you know what?
I love it when I pull you into the rant with me.
I know, I'm sorry. I was going to go off on some more, but better not. We've got much more ranting to do in the first ever Hacker News.
You know what? Let's lighten up a little bit. How about
Please do.
Let's lighten up.
Give me a top 10 list.
I like statistics. I like numbers. Numbers jump out at me. When I hear 200 million accounts in Hotmail, wow, that's a big number. That's a lot of people.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I got some numbers here that kind of blew my mind. And frankly, I mean, I couldn't believe some of these. Basically, I have been sitting in front of me a list of the 10 most powerful supercomputers in the world.
Big iron.
And who do you think would be, just take a guess, who do you think would be manufacturer?
Well, I said big iron, and I would think Big Blue would be one of them.
Well, you would be pretty darn right. Big Blue, IBM, of course, he's referring to, has 4 of the top 10.
No kidding.
4 of the top 10 supercomputers are from IBM.
What are they running, though?
Well, they're different.
98!
Several different things, and I'll point out some of the more interesting ones. But basically, 4, their highest one, though, was 3rd ranked. The top 2 surprised me with who they were. The number two most powerful supercomputer in the world is from Hewlett-Packard.
Really?
It's an Alpha Server SC. Now, that turns out 7.727 teraflops per second.
Tera meaning?
Teraflops are trillions.
Trillion, that's right.
Trillions of calculations per second. Trillions. To put it in perspective, an average PC will handle 0.0001 teraflops. So it would take 1,000 computers to do one. So you can think of 7,000 average desktop computers is what this is doing, and that really is not exactly a good comparison or a good measurement, but it gives you an idea. And that one's the number 2 on the list.
Wow.
Number 2. Just for trivial knowledge, in Los Alamos National Laboratory.
Ooh, nearby.
Yeah, I thought you'd like that.
Maybe they can let me use it for a while.
Another interesting one on here before I give the number one. Number 5. Number 2 is Hewlett-Packard. 3 and 4 were both IBM. Number 5 is from Linux Networks with an X. NETWORX.
Yes.
It's an MCR Linux cluster.
Beowulf?
Cluster has been a term that's been out there for a while, and people have been recognizing and seeing the power of clustering. So this is at Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory. And this is from 2002, so they may have even made more advances. Created in 2002. This is an up-to-date list, but that was started in 2002, so who knows what might pop up on the list next year from that same type atmosphere.
But it was number one.
Number one, well, let me remind you again, number two was 7.727 teraflops per second from Hewlett-Packard.
Okay.
The number one most powerful supercomputer in the world is from the Earth Simulator Center in Japan.
Nice, I've heard of that.
The Earth Simulator 5120 powers out, I just can't even believe this number, even though I've read it several times, 5 times more than the number two, 35.86, almost 35.9 teraflops per second.
Ouch. Wow. That's all to simulate the Earth.
35.9 trillion instructions per second. It's just amazing. It's just unfathomable how much data can be crunched.
They're like simulating every human on the Earth.
It's got to be doing just the most mind-boggling analysis simulations. I mean, throw distributed on .NET on that bad boy.
Solved.
No, so it's just, we have, you know, there's a lot of distributed programs to help solve cancer, do, what do they call it, folding, protein folding, trying to find. This baby, this is what we need more of. We need more computers like this. I would probably drop dead faint at the cost of something like this.
Oh, yeah.
But this is the kind of thing that will move society forward. This is the kind of thing that will solve problems that the human mind, no matter how brilliant it is, will never be able to calculate the numbers that these things do. And
pure,
that amazes me. This
right.
Amazing list.
Pure quantity. I'm assuming they're simulating global warming or something of that ilk. But, you know, am I wrong in that it, beyond the supercomputing and all the huge, you know, nuclear weapons simulations or, you know, who knows, you know, population growth, who knows what they're simulating, beyond that, is the trend, you know, in computing and enterprise computing going back towards mainframes? I would read a lot about people implementing Linux, you know, open source in their companies and going towards, you know, thin servers, or I'm sorry, thin clients. Is it going back that way? I mean, large computers and then, you know, reliable, you know, semi-dumb terminals? I wonder.
Well, you know, they've never disappeared. You know, that was a big...
Oh, true.
That's a big myth that a lot of people, you know, they don't teach them in college anymore. And if anything, they teach the opposite. They teach them that they are going away. And they even use the term and reference dinosaur, you know, dinosaur COBOL programmers on these dinosaur computers. You know, and they're going away because we're going to have servers that are more powerful and do it. Well, guess what? It never happened. It never, ever happened. If anything, IBM's cash cow, their big money-making machine, is a mid-range system, which is closer to a mainframe than anything. It's a mid-range system. Their IBM AS400. It is their greatest seller and their best performer, and those are the only machines that are capable of handling the millions of users that a lot of sites have, that a lot of companies have, and a lot of jobs that get run, whether they're batch jobs, whether they're interactive people logging in. They frankly, no matter how powerful your machine, Sun makes an E10K, an E15K, that's pretty darn powerful, but mainframes still exist and still have a place.
Oh, of course, and I know they've never gone away, but, you know, the PC boom is great. We're going to give all this power to the user and put a PC on their desktop, and they'll have their own computer and all this whoopee, wow, wow. Well, you know, the companies I've worked at, the companies I'm familiar with, they all use PCs. PC on the desktop, nasty to take care of. Everybody's got different stuff, different crap. They're always breaking it. You know, and I think, you know, the average user doesn't need their own PC. I really think that if you had more centralized computing, and again, to some thin clients, you know, maybe a smart client, I don't know, something for them that is simpler to use, simpler to administrate, I think that is where things should go. I think it should go open source and go to the, you know, to the, how do I say it, the more efficient, a more efficient desktop.
And much more reliable, much more stable these mainframes are, too. You know, a lot of people, that's one of their comparisons between Windows and Linux, or Unix in general, is how much more stable that is than Windows, how much more stable a Unix or Linux environment is. Well, mainframes are even more stable than that. Mainframes will be up for years and years at a time.
Right.
You know, it takes a lightning bolt from the hand of God to take a mainframe offline sometimes.
Right. Multiple nines. Multiple nines.
Oh, yeah. They're still amazing machines. And, yes, I do think they, like you said, they've never left. They've always been around. But, yes, they are starting to take some of the headlines back, and they're all starting to come back into power as people recognize that it's not going to move away the way they had hoped and the way they had thought. So,
yeah.
So yeah, there's definitely a lot of information out there and a lot of hacking possibilities to learn about these machines.
No doubt. You know, I come to think of it, I've got a network in my house here, right? I've got five computers, you know, small network. And they're all PCs running different operating systems. And I think to myself, that would be so cool to get one bigger server and then just run a bunch of terminals that had a lot of capabilities, right? All, you know, all serving, you know, I don't know, a KDE desktop or something. That would just be the coolest shit ever. Not to mention I could administer the whole thing from one box.
You know, it's actually kind of funny. Some of the places that I worked, they have these P4 desktops and top-of-the-line machines, and they'll update them each year and give themselves and buy themselves new computers. And all they do is run a Telnet client on it and a mainframe computer. The most intensive thing they may run is email.
Yeah.
But they'll sure as shit spend $2,000 or whatever to upgrade to a new computer the next year.
Go to the top line stuff.
Yep.
Whatever. Now, I'll get to that rant afterwards. Okay, Ooh, I like this one. I've actually heard about this, Tank. Is this the last? Is this going to close out the Hacker News?
Do we have time? This could be another, I can try to keep it short, but,
we've got some time.
Okay. Also in the news recently, there was a study done. This is probably a couple months old now, but it never really grabbed big headlines like I thought it should have. I guess it wasn't released a big, because of the topic, it didn't really grab headlines. But there were two researchers from Cambridge University, two students, researchers, by the name of Mike Bond, and I'm probably going to overpronounce this name, Piotr, or just Peter, probably, Zielinski. And they discovered that by doing a little bit of analysis, a little bit of hacking, and that's what hacking is, analysis, that you could, well, before I even say that, when you let's put a scenario out there. Let's say you are at an ATM and you've forgotten your password, okay, and you've got to start guessing. Now, how would you go about guessing? Would you start at a number and start working your way up one by one? Would you start at the end and work your way down? Would you just start randomly pressing numbers?
Good question. If I had to totally guess, like I had no clue whatsoever?
Absolutely right.
Well, yeah, you would go systematically.
Okay, so mathematically, there are up to 10,000
right.
possible combinations. So if you wanted to play the law of averages, statistics would tell you you'd get it somewhere in the middle, say 5,000 guesses.
Right.
Well, these two researchers, again, Mike Bond and Peter Zielinski, they found a way to guess and a PIN number, a four-digit PIN number, whether it be ATM, whether it be a voicemail box, whether it be any... In their particular study, it was on an ATM. They found that they can guess the password, a four-digit password in the ATM, in 15 guesses or less. 15.
Amazing.
If you were to lose your ATM card, and they found it, they only need 15 guesses to get into your account. Now, of course, that's not what they're doing with it and not what they're condoning. They
right.
did the study as an analysis and as an example to show and explain something that I find interesting. And I actually, I was so interested in this, I just started doing some research myself. And it's a term that they call API hacking, excuse me. API meaning, of course, application programming interface. They found in this particular study, which was focused on ATMs, they realized that, again, back to the mainframes, banks are using mainframes a lot. For the amount of money and the numbers that they crunch through, there's mainframes at a lot of different banks, the majority of banks. And the mainframe days, back in the mainframe days, they have APIs and programs, for lack of a better term, we'll just call them programs, that generate a random PIN number for people. Well, programmers might know that one of the most difficult things to program is to actually generate a true
random number. Yes.
And that could be debated on how random is random and is it possible to truly make a random number, but we won't go there. But generating a random number. And one of the best ways to do it, one of the most common ways to do it now, and the most reliable ways to do it now, is based on the system time. You need to start with a seed of some sort, and the seed can't be anything predictable. It can't be pulled from a table. It can't be, you know, made up off the top of your head, because even that is not truly random. What they do is you take a time stamp from a programming standpoint. Boy, am I getting too deep on this one?
No, go for it.
From a programming standpoint, you will take a time stamp right down to the 10th, 100th, 1,000th fraction of a second. Since time is continuous, any given point in time versus any other given point in time will give you the closest thing to at least a random starting point. You know, let's say you took the, right now it is 9:33 and 42.587 seconds. You take that 7 and you know that's going so fast that any given moment you grab that number, it's going to be something different. So if you wanted to generate a random number between, say, 1 and 100, you might take those last two digits, .08.087, and the last two digits give you 87. That's a random number, or as close as you can get to a random number. That's a good way to start anyway. There's a lot of other things you can do once you get the seed. You don't have to use the seed as a random number. You can then multiply that by another timestamp or multiply that by some algorithm you've made up to generate a PIN number or a random number for anything. Well, they realized that a lot of these old mainframes didn't do that. And they realized that there was an actual algorithm going on that generated a PIN number based on information, the account number. So you have an account number on your credit card. The mainframe will go in there, and it will pick numbers off of that account card. And the account numbers are fairly regular. There is a pattern to them that is dictated and governed, and there are standards to those. So it will take and analyze your number to generate a PIN. So to a user, yeah, you'll see a lot of different PIN numbers on a lot of different cards. But with the card number, you can basically, I won't say reverse engineer, but program backwards, so to speak, and arrive at a point where the PIN number from this could be one of up to 15 possibilities.
Nice. That is cool.
Yeah, so that's I thought that was really, really interesting. And again, I don't know if reverse engineering is the best word for it, but it's more like looking at the algorithm that creates this information, finding out where it comes from and how it's generated.
Yeah.
On a simpler, like a very simpler, you ever go to like you ever get a random email address signed to you that's like the first three letters of your last name and the last four digits of your social? Well, you see that on a website, and you obviously notice the pattern as a hacker. You catch stuff like that very easily. There is a API written, a program written that says, okay, here's how you generate a password. Take the last three letters, put on the first four of the social, that's the password. Well, you can do that in your head. They did a little analysis and found out that this was generated by the program a lot more difficult than that. But the theory is very sound, and learning the most information you can about these APIs and about how the system works and how it generates things will give you a leg up and an inside track on how it works, why it works, and therefore how to beat it.
Well, you know, I set my own PIN when I set my ATM. Screw the system.
They generate a default one for you, usually, especially if you get one through the mail or if you have
true.
A net bank
yeah.
account or something like that.
Yes, yes. And practically, that gives you, what, a 1 in 5 chance because the machine will eat it after 3 tries.
Exactly.
But you can use this, you know, the theory, the idea, in many, many places, right? Personally, you can surf them, right? You want to pin, you just surf it, right? You want to get in a cipher lock, you surf it. That's my personal favorite. But, yeah, you can apply this to many, many things. So, maybe you don't, maybe you're not into numbers, you know, as much as Stank is, but still reading this will enlighten you, will enrich you enough to give you that capability, right? To give you that, that one more tool in your Swiss Army knife of capabilities and make you a better person, make you a better hacker.
Yeah, so sometimes you notice the pattern, like I said with the email addresses, sometimes you can notice the pattern. But when you can't notice the pattern, step back and see where it came from.
Yeah.
Look at how the pattern is generated. Then you might see it after the fact when you look at it, you know, from a farther distance. Look at the grand scheme of things.
The grand scheme of things.
That's the lesson in that particular. That's why I said it's a shame that it didn't get more publicity and reach more news, because it really is a very deep and very, you know, could potentially be something that could change a lot of things. If people start realizing and recognizing code and seeding and how it works, people will start recognizing how things work and how code word programs work, and you know, that's what it's all about.
Oh, I know, but boy, won't the corporations and government hate that if everybody knew how everything worked?
Yeah, that's a very, very bad thing. I think Screamer Alex would tell you how much he hates public disclosure.
Yeah, they count. They count on us not knowing, you know. They count on pulling the wool over our eyes. They don't want us to know about how things work, right? Yep. They want us to have Palladium and no peer-to-peer. And nobody wants you to know how the telephone system works. You do not need to know for any reason how a 5E functions. There's no reason. Bullshit. There is a reason. It's for my edification, damn it, if anything else.
Because we can.
That's right. Because we enjoy it. That is the Hacker News. I liked it. I loved it.
Oh.
I want more. I want more Hacker News. This is great. Can I contribute to the Hacker News?
Oh, by all means.
Excellent. And can everybody else?
Oh, absolutely. By all means. I would love to see this, you know, a lot of these things I find out from the forums, and people send me emails and Slashdot I get an occasional things from, but they, if you go to Slashdot regularly, they already analyze it to death anyway, so I don't know that I can add much to a lot of those, but, you know, the stuff that's very particular to hackers, you know, I really like to bring on here and like you said, discuss with you and with Mute and hear what you guys have to say and see if we agree and or disagree about some of these things. You know, I'm not always right or not always, you know, my opinion is the best opinion or anything like that. If you disagree, by all means, I'd love to hear that too.
Right, and another thing along those same lines, nobody knows everything. We can make mistakes, you can make mistakes, who cares? Let's learn from those mistakes. I was talking to Slip this weekend. Great conversation. Very intelligent man, knows a lot of stuff. But he's very humble. He's very humble. Because he realizes that. And I prescribe to the same kind of thought. Particularly, it's called Shoshin, and that is, mind of a beginner. Always beginner. Always. Always consider yourself a beginner, no matter what you're doing. You're never the expert. There's always something more to learn. And that's the joy of hacking. Oh, it sounds like a freaking... Sounds like a porno book, The Joy of Hacking. It is, though. I'm serious.
Show today?
But yeah, I think the theme today is really porno.
See, I went and messed the whole thing up at the beginning.
Yeah, you did. That was the Hacker News. Actually, you know, I just scanned. I had a spare, I don't know, hour or something, so I went ahead and did a little ego scan, did a 800 2XX dual, right? And, dude, if I didn't get more porn numbers... Man, I've never got so many porn number scanning before. It's unbelievable.
I would think that the companies, the telco companies, just forward all those numbers to one location.
They do, actually. I ran in that a lot.
It's like the same company like 20 times when they don't fill up the space with the 800 numbers.
Right, but do they get charged for each Watts line? I mean, for this, you know, I wonder how much that costs. So can they buy both?
Like a number 40.
Yeah, but, well, I just wonder how much, you know, do they buy these numbers in bulk? I mean, I don't know.
Probably look every month and say, well, you know, this block of 800 numbers or 900 numbers isn't bought. You know, we could use these.
Right. You know, I'll go ahead and bust this out now. It's kind of freak related. I always try to, you know, grill telco employees for information. And I actually got one to talk. I actually got a guy, right? He was very cool. He was Mike9850, right? Quest employees now have to give you a four-digit, you know, identification number when you talk to him now. So I was talking to Mike9850, and he was very forthcoming with a lot of information, a lot I already knew. Like, I knew what switch I was on. He told me, well, you're on a 5E switch. I mean, I would ask for a, you know, cable and pair number. And they wouldn't freak, but they, well, no, you do not get that information. We do not give that information out. Oh, you will rule the world or become a terrorist. You know, you blow something up, you knew your cable and pair. But this guy was just, first of all, I think he was kind of a freak. Because I got him to say that, yeah, man, I really love this stuff. Because there's all these numbers on his screen. And I'm like, well, read some out, you know. And he's like, well, you're on a 5ESS. And, you know, and I know where that is. And he said, well, you're in LATA 664 and... LMOS. This one I didn't understand. LMOS, which is line maintenance operation service. I forgot what it was. It's like a repair order database. And he said it's 122. So I don't know what that. I don't exactly understand that. I don't know if that what I had changed to my service, the number was 122, or if I'm in database 122. I didn't understand that one. But this guy really, really talked it up. So thank you, salute to Mike9850 at Quest. I guess I do have a bigger message here, and that is take every opportunity you can to learn as much as you can about the technology you deal with and the technology that you pay for, being your telco, your cable system, your internet provider, your satellite or your TV provider. Check that stuff out. Get as much information as you can. Hone your social engineering skills while you do it. Right? Just, start in with your lighthearted, you know, chit-chat. Ha ha, oh, yo, that's funny guy. Ha ha, you know, and then grill them. Get the information. Keep going. back off if it's getting too far, you know, and see what you can find out. It's really interesting. I like doing that with Comcast, my cable internet provider. You know, they've got the call centers in Canada. Nova Scotia, if I'm correct. And they're more than happy to talk about their system, you know? Make up a problem. If you're just curious, you can do this, by the way. Make up a problem and call them up and get some info. It doesn't matter if everything's working perfectly. You can say, well, man, but I swear this isn't working or this is happening. As well, everything looks perfect. Guess what? That is a perfect, perfect opportunity for you to get some information out of them about their system. Wow, that was a pretty good social engineering tip, if I do say so my damn self. That was a good show, gentlemen. Mute, I feel for you, man. You were sniffling the whole time. How you feeling?
Well, headache's gone, but, you know, the sinuses, you know, right in the cheek area.
Oh.
Destroying me here.
Killer, man.
And, you know, you got this Latin test bullshit tomorrow, you know, I just hate it.
Yeah, dude.
But we push through.
You're a team player.
Yeah, team player for my group.
110%.
Yeah. Oh, wait, can I mention one quick thing really quick?
Please do.
All right. Maybe some of you guys saw a little thing on Slashdot about a week ago about a guy named, like, Andrew, then his handle's Bunny, Huang, I don't know, botching his name. Anyways, a while ago, he started working with the Xbox, you know, hacking and stuff, and he got in pretty far because, after I find out the guy's electrical engineer at MIT, well, you know, the guy's probably get, like, God almost.
I read his stuff. I would read his stuff, and I wouldn't understand it, but I read a lot of it before this book came out, yeah.
Oh, and then I looked around his website, and he's got, like, this just crazy stuff. So what I did was, well, then he's releasing a book. And I'm like, well, maybe I'll get it, you know. Then I see, like, $20, and I'm like, well, I think I should get it. But I'll wait, you know, maybe we'll see how widely spread this is going to be. The next morning when I wake up, I fire up Root Secure, plug, I look at Security Focus. Security Focus says the guy's already sold 500 copies. He's only making 1,000 of them on the first run. I immediately whip out the credit card, pop the stuff in, and my book's going to be here sometime in early June.
Nice. Are we going to get a review?
Of course. Well, you know who's going to get the review?
Radio Freak America.
No.
What?
Revolution.
Oh, very nice. Oh, I'm hurt.
They're going to have both. They're going to get
nice
Best Buy and the book report, the book review.
Very nice. Ben Rev. By the way, I think somebody wanted to pimp Ben Rev.
Yeah, actually, I got a couple. I got a pimp Ben Binary Revolution. Orders have been coming in. You know, it's been going pretty good so far. We're learning as we go along. So, you know, we got some international order issues that it's not a big problem, but we're taking care of. We might need to discuss
We will take care of those international orders. If you're overseas, if you're in another country, because we know that the U.S. is not the world, we will get you that magazine. Do not worry.
Somehow or another, we will work something out.
Yes.
Tugboat to China.
That's right. We'll put it in a bottle and throw it in the ocean. I've had some orders come in. Thank you very much. They've gone out, so be expecting your Bin Rev. I've got something in the works for Bin Rev. Hopefully that'll come through. It's going to be should be some good stuff. You got some other shouts, Stank?
Yeah, well, first of all, make sure you buy some Ben Rev for your friends, great Mother's Day gift, you know, and get back to us, you know, if you like or don't like it, if there's comments that you have, if you've got something you want to say or questions you want to follow up, come to the forums at stankdog.com. Email us, the address is at benrev.com. You can email the webmaster, you can email the letters section. I want to hear feedback on, do you like the way we started off? Are we going in the right direction? Would you like to see less of this or more of that? You know, this is going to be, I've said it before, this is what you make it. So, you know, tell us what you like, dislike, what direction you want to go, and please, by all means, send submissions. You know, articles at benrev.com. We'd love to see what you have, and maybe we can put it in the next issue. And as long as I'm pimping things out, distributed.net. I haven't pimped that in a long time on the show, so we got a lot of new people in the forums now, and a lot of new listeners. We do have a DDP, distributed.net team. Now, if you don't know what that is, you can check it out in the forums. I have detailed instructions, explanation of what it is and how it works. Or you can go to distributed.net, download the client. I got directions in the forums you can follow. And join the DDP team. We got, I think we're up to 11 members now. We finally got where we're holding, not only holding steady, we're actually gaining a spot each week or thereabouts. We had dropped down to 370, 380, and we're back up to like 350 now. So we're charging back up there, and the more people we get in there, even every little bit helps, you know. Every little bit will help us climb that much further. So distributed.net, come on, hop on board.
Do they have a Linux client?
Yeah, Linux, they have a client for almost every platform that you could possibly imagine, except they might not have one that runs on the Earth Simulator. I'm not sure about that one.
Yeah, that one, you know, compatibility issues there are, nasty.
Yep. Yeah, and other than that, I want to give a shout-out to my man, Zerl. Been speaking with him in email lately. I like to hopefully work with him on some projects in the future, and he knows who he is, so hopefully we'll be able to come up with some good news from him soon. And that's all I got tonight.
I want to pimp Logan 5 putting together the best goddamn magazine we've ever seen in our life.
Hell yeah.
We can say that every week, and I never get tired of saying it, because it wouldn't be without him. It just wouldn't be the same. It wouldn't be what it is without him, you know?
Dude, he made it happen. He is deity status.
Absolutely. I had a vision. I knew what I wanted, and I could not make it happen, and he could. And I'll never, never, ever take away from that.
No, props to him. I want to give shouts to Not Theory, to Bland, to Mute, to Kuroshi, everybody that goes on the con line, and I want to tell everybody again, use your power wisely.